This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Want to know what's going on in your neck of the woods and learn the history and the people behind the events that you love across the state? Get to know the real Mississippi. Check out MPB Think Radio's Next Stop Mississippi podcast on all platforms or on the MPB Public Media app.
From MPB Think Radio, this is Now You're Talking. It's a show about the most interesting people and stories of Mississippi. I'm your host, Marshall Ramsey. I'm editor-at-large and editorial cartoonist of Mississippi Today. Our guests today, they're award-winning sports writer Rick Cleveland, who I've worked with for 28 years, and best-selling author Neil White. And they have joined forces to create the really good Mississippi football book, stories and records from the greatest teams, coaches, and players who lived and played in the greatest football state. It's a fantastic book. It's a publication that includes profiles of players, coaches, teams, and a sort of A to Z listing of all things football, including NFL Hall of Famers, the best seasons, not-so-great moments, which I could relate to some of those, and much more. They join us today to talk a little bit about football, the respective careers, future projects, and more. And Jermaine, it's good to see you today, my friend. And I was emceeing a concert Saturday night, and you were in the audience, and you were so rude you didn't come say hello.
I was trying to go incognito.
I know it. I'm like, man, you told me that today, and I had to go sit down and have a big cry.
Right. When I go out, I try to go really...
Oh, yeah, because you're so famous now. You just can't go out anywhere without just being mobbed. I know how that goes.
Anonymity is my favorite word.
All right, scale 1 to 10, how'd I do? No pressure.
You did great. I mean, you were a concert host.
Yeah.
You hosted a whole blues concert just about.
Yeah, because you know, when you think of the blues, you think of Marshall Ramsey.
Marshall Ramsey.
Exactly.
Goes, I mean, the blues synonymous Marshall.
Actually, no. Not in a million years, but it was so much fun. I had a great time doing that. The Mississippi Book Festival, man, that was just awesome.
Yeah, we were out there. We did some of the interviews with the authors, recorded mm-hmm. those, so that was pretty awesome. Got to see some of the big names. So,
yeah, some of the big names?
Yeah.
So you and Mike Pence hung out?
No, that big name did not come around where we were recording,
what?
But I did get to see the stream when it happened.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I missed it. I think I just passed out from being out in the heat signing books, and I, you know, had to go sleep it off
right.
and so forth before my panel. I had a 4 o'clock panel.
Yeah.
So, but ours was full, and it was great. It was a real good – I had – pro wrestling, let's see, I had signs around Mississippi, I had the football stadium book that I helped illustrate, and then a book on the hidden stories of the Delta.
That's when you know you're big time.
What do you mean? What, the fact that I get to moderate a panel, or the fact that
you've got all those books?
Yeah, but it was really cool, because you think, well, none of those books have anything to do with each other, but in a way they did, because it, you know, when I took this job in 1996 and left San Diego, which, by the way, is probably underwater at this point. That's, man, talk about, I'm sure The Rock is driving through there with a Hummer right now, because it's like a disaster, even an earthquake. It was just crazy. But right before I left, my editor, who was a great writer in her own right, she gave me a gift. And she said, man, we hate to lose you, but here's a gift. And so I opened it up. It was North Toward Home by Willie Morris. Mm. And she looked me in the eye and she said, you will be successful the day that you can create sense of place in your work as well as Willie Morris did. And now, 30 years nearly later, I realize there's no way in Hades that I could ever create a sense of place as good as Willie Morris did, because he was the man on that. But anyway, that was a nice gift. And I thought of that this weekend when I was doing the panel. So it was great. And our guests today, who were in the studio and they're sitting there waiting to talk, were doing their panel about the same time as Mike Pence. And of course, everybody is like thinking, basically Mike Pence was just the overflow crowd from y'all, on that.
Absolutely.
Man, I tell you what, Neil, it's good to see you.
Good to see you too, Marshall.
Yeah, it's good to see you. And Rick, of course, like I said, I never see you, even though we've worked together for 30 years.
I come in about once every couple months.
And, well, I know. You do. You wave and so forth. But I actually see you more now at Mississippi Today than I did at the Clarion Ledger.
Yeah.
Which, you know what, the more I realize, you know what, Rick Cleveland's the smartest man I know, because he's not coming into this place. So it worked out pretty well. But congratulations on the new book. And I just want to let you know the bar is pretty high on this radio show today, because last week's show ended up on USA Today, the Daily Mail, and the Today Show. So y'all are going to have to say something pretty controversial to be able to hit that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that's going to happen, but we're going to do our best.
Okay, Thank you. I appreciate you putting in the effort today, and we will get you a free T-shirt or something if you manage to pull it off. I will say this. So we did have Michael Orr last week, and it was actually a delightful interview. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed his book. And as soon as he walked out of the building, I am not kidding you, my phone went off, and ESPN announced the lawsuit, and I was just like, son of a gun, you know, because I didn't get, obviously, any chance to ask him any questions about that. But they did pull some clips on that. Like I said, y'all know more about this situation than I do, and I know y'all probably feel the same way I do about it. I just kind of feel a general sense of sadness about it.
Sure.
Yeah. It's like watching families fight.
From years of experience, being old, I know that the truth is probably somewhere in between.
Yeah.
What Orr says. And what the Tuies are saying,
right.
You know, I think it's somewhere in between. My thing is just sad.
Yeah, exactly.
Sad.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just sad.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they're all good folks.
I think so too. Yeah. And you just pray that somewhere in the middle they can meet, and you know, because like I said, Michael was good on the interview, but I think his heart and his intentions are good on the foundation that he started up and so forth. So, you know, you want to see him have a good rest of his life. And
of course. Man.
Anyway, but yeah, that was just a surreal radio moment, you know, on that. And so, but anyway, it's 195 degrees outside right now, and football season starting. It's already started around high school football started, and college football's about getting ready to start. I know we've got my son's school has got their first game this weekend. I don't even know how they're going to play. I mean, it's just because y'all have played in this kind of heat before, and it's just – and of course, we played back when, A, water was a bad thing, and, B, salt tablets were God.
You know? Exactly right.
You know. Yeah. I just don't know how these kids are going to do it. I was like, yeah, game time is going to be at 3:30 in the morning to be able to pull it off.
I was driving the other day and passed a high school football field, a turf field.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like 4 in the afternoon, and they were in full gear, and I looked at my thermometer in my truck, and it said 103. And when I got to a stoplight, I checked what the heat index was, and it was 114. And they're out there in full gear on turf. And, you know, as you know.
Yeah, it's like the sun.
If it's 103 actual temperature on the turf, it's like 125.
Yeah, it's dangerous. And, you know, there was a year when I was in school at an Ole Miss game, first weekend in September. One of the linemen lost 20 pounds during the game.
Wow.
I mean, it's water weight, but yeah, it's just, it's dangerous.
Yeah, I think about the Wilbanks family and Walker, it seems like a million years ago. He was at Jackson Prep and he passed away because of the situation, because of the heat. So you just, like I said, it doesn't happen often with the kids, but you know, you worry about them. Somebody's like, oh, you're weak, Rubs. I say, man, when I first played in 1980, it was 104 degrees. I had a black helmet, which was like having an Easy Bake oven on your head. You know, I was like, I remember how bad that was. I'm not weak. I just have PTSD from it. So on that. So anyway, but the good thing is, though, football means fall's coming.
That's right.
And cool temperatures are coming. And as an athlete, man, as soon as that first time that temperature goes down to about 70, your heart rate, you know, you're Superman at that point because you're trained for the heat. So congrats on the book, by the way.
Thank you.
And I guess, you know, I like a good origin story. You know, how did y'all decide to work together and to do this book? Because I know you both and I respect you both and I know your skill sets. How did you decide to say, okay, we're going to team up on this? Because it's like y'all literally are like bacon and eggs. You seem to work really well together on this book.
I think we do. Rick, you want to start and then I'll go
ahead. We had worked together before when I was at the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
And got tired of asking people for money all the time. I decided to do something I knew how to do and write a book about the members of the Hall of, you know, Mississippi's Greatest Athletes was what it was called.
Yeah.
Got together with Neil, and I just cannot even begin to describe what a pleasure it is to work with Neil White on a book. I mean, he's just, what a professional in every respect. And You know, Neil had this idea. I'm trying to think.
Well, I think what happened was I had been batting this idea around sort of a Guinness Book of World Records for old Mississippi football for a couple of years. And then you wrote your column about the scientific study, the mathematical statistics about Mississippi's per capita football production and professionals being the highest in the country, not even close, second, third, fourth place, which is modified as the introduction of this book. And I said, Rick, we should do this. You've got all the stories. I'll handle the statistics and the bells and whistles and the pop culture. You write your greatest hits. And we started talking about this about 3 years ago and really decided to do it about 2 years ago. And Rick has been writing and sending me stories for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
That's about right. And you really got – I mean, you've had so many projects, but you really buckled down on this project, what, about –
Six months ago.
Yeah.
The graphic design and the layout and the way you've organized and you structured it also works really well on this book, too.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, the content's good, obviously. There was obviously some – I mean, I don't even know how you pulled all the records together that you did. You know, and Rick and I both worked at the Clarion Ledger for years, and when I first started at the Clarion Ledger many, many moons ago, the sports department was bigger than a lot of newsrooms were. It was just huge at that point. And so, and Friday nights, it was really huge because all the stringers came in, and it was like a data collecting machine at that point. And that kind of went away just with all the cuts and everything else. So y'all had this huge gap, I guess probably about mid 2010s or so.
About 2014.
So you had to kind of do like I do when I do my accounting. It had to do kind of forensic looking backwards, trying to figure out where all those numbers came from. Talk a little bit about that project, because I know that had to be a lot of work too.
It was. So, you know, the great thing about this book, I think, is there are statistics and the top passers, receivers, rushers, interceptors, tacklers from high school, junior college, major college, all the divisions in college and professionals. The pros, those statistics were available. All we had to do was just sort out the Mississippi players. The Division I colleges, same thing with their media guides. But the junior college and high school, we really had to dig deep. And Rick's son, Tyler, who's a talented writer and covers high school sports, helped me with the high school section greatly. We communicated with coaches, and once we got the original list, we sent them to everyone, the sports information directors, the coaches, the associations, and we said, we begged them, point out our errors. Tell us what we did wrong. Yeah. Help us get this right, because this is going to be a foundation upon which other people will build. And they really came through. And so it was not easy, but I love a good list.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, that's one of the things I kind of joke, and I don't mean this as an insult in any way. I mean this as a guy. This is like the perfect back of the toilet book.
Yeah,
you know, because you want to read it in little bursts. You know, you can go and read a feature on somebody, or you can find a statistic on that. And that's the way I've been reading it since I got it. I got it over like 2 or 3 days ago, and I've been kind of going through it a little bit at a time. But there's just so much stuff in there, and I thought that I knew, but I don't. And that's my biggest compliment of the book. Also, too, I just want to give a quick shout out to Tyler. If there's anybody on the planet that inherited your dad's and your brother's sense of humor, it is your son. I could listen to, you know, like Bobby. I always said, Bobby, if I could listen to him read the phone book. In fact, some days, you know, because I sat maybe 6 desks away from him, which I could hear him clear as if he were sitting next to me the whole time for, I guess, 15 years. But Tyler's great. And you two have been doing a really good job with your podcast together. It's on Mississippi Today. And I'm really proud of y'all. I know you enjoy working with them.
It's really about the most fun I've ever had and call it work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This is Now You're Talking on MPB Think Radio. I am your host, Marshall Ramsey. The book is the Mississippi Football Book. The co-editors are here, and authors too, because they did a lot of the writing. We've got Rick Cleveland, legendary Rick Cleveland, and of course, Neil White here too. Neil, you of course you're like the chief bottle washer at Nautilus Publishing Company and have published so many great books, one of them being on Robert Kayat. I know that was a lot of fun getting to work with that.
It was.
Your book, In the Sanctuary of Outcasts, is in my top 10 of favorite books.
Thank you.
And I mean that not just because you're sitting on the show. It is a wonderful book, and it is very humble book, and is one where, I got to know a little bit more about you personally, and I recommend that to everybody to read that. But
thanks, Marshall.
This book was fun, and like I said, and we were talking a little bit off the air, the fact that that's really cool about it, it was if you think you know Mississippi football, you don't. Because there's a lot of stuff that you guys dug up, and you know Rick was able to write about it and dig up some stuff. I mean, you know, like I said, Rick, you've been covering this. I mean, you won State Sports Writer of the Year when you were 20 years old. So you've done that 14 times, and you've covered it for, I'm not even going to do the math. What, 50 years?
57
years.
Yeah.
Wow.
He started young.
He did.
13.
But yeah. Marshall, I found out. I learned in working on this book and researching it and through Neil's research, I learned a lot of things that I didn't know.
Like what?
Well, I'll tell you one is that I always thought that Bruiser Kennard was Mississippi's first All-American college football yeah. All-American. Well, Neil informed me. That he wasn't. Tell him about it.
Yeah. Well, in 1928, a young man named Marchmand, they called him Marchie Schwartz, who went to St. Stanislaus, he signed on to play at Notre Dame with Newt Rockne. And in 1929 and 1930, he was a two-time consensus All-American, won the national championship with Newt Rockne in 1929. And it was all over the newspapers, but he had been forgotten, and we rediscovered Marchie Schwartz from Bay St. Louis.
From Bay St. Louis. And how did that get forgotten? You know, that's amazing.
I don't know. I think
because he went to Notre Dame or what?
Probably yeah. because yeah. he went out of state.
Yeah, he didn't go to Ole Miss.
Marshall, who do you think – who's the only native Mississippian to have won the Heisman Trophy?
Billy Cannon.
That's it.
Yeah.
Not very many Mississippians know that. They yeah. all, if you ask that question, 99 times out of 100, the answer you'll get is Doc Blanchard.
Oh, who yeah. was also St. Stanislaus guy.
He yeah. was a St. Stanislaus guy, but he was not a native Mississippian.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's just, you know, things like that. And you know, the fact that Billy Cannon, who, you know, grew up in Philadelphia, Mississippi, spoiled what might have been the greatest college football yeah. season anybody's ever had for Ole Miss.
Oh, I mean, you talk to Ole Miss fans of a certain generation, his name is like, ooh, don't bring it up, yeah. you know, on that. Yeah,
I was a little afraid about what my father would say when he saw that he has a full page in this book.
Oh. It's
Dad,
just
Dad
one
was
of
at
many.
That game, you know.
Oh, what? Yeah, yeah. yeah. Speaking of, I love that you tell a great story. And of course, Robert Kayat's one of the best storytellers that you'll come across. But talking about when he played, and to me it just still blows my mind that college players used to play against pro players, and he absolutely went up against a giant of a player, and what's kind of cool for me because I was sitting there reading it, going, oh yeah, my dad was actually at that ball game. I mean, he was in
that's
the stands.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, I just think it was cool because he was talking about that. He was talking about yeah, pro players, they just run all over the college players. Well, y'all actually have that story in here.
Yeah, Robert told me that a long time ago about he was fresh out of Ole Miss, said he probably shaved once a week, didn't have to, you know.
Yeah.
And he weighed, as most two-way players did back then, he weighed about, you know, 215, 210, and he goes to play in the college all-star game at where the defending NFL champions play a bunch of college all-stars. He lines up at guard, and the guy across from him is Big Daddy Lipscomb, Eugene Big Daddy Lipscomb, who, you know, was like 6'8", 300 pounds with a full beard. He said, yeah. And Lipscomb said, looked across the line, and Robert, the way he tells you, said, you know, you usually – you stare at the guy across from you, and you're looking right into his eyes. In this case, I was looking right into his stomach.
Oh, Lord.
And he said, Big Daddy, he said, Sweet Pea, does your mama know where you are tonight?
And you know what Robert answered?
What's that?
No, sir.
I love that the guy that Robert went in for literally got hit and got up and walked out
and
of the
went
stadium.
Out, went out, climbed into the dark end of the U-shaped stadium at Soldier Field. Yeah.
So this guy was so terrifying on that. But by the end of the game, though, he was like telling Robert, good job.
Yeah. After he threw him around like a rag doll.
Robert probably still has had a couple of injuries still from that day, I could imagine.
Robert says that was the day that I really began thinking about becoming a lawyer.
Yeah. Law school started looking really good.
Absolutely.
There's so many stories about people that I didn't know about, but there's so many things about people that I did. Number one, Medgar Evers, which obviously a legend for all the right reasons and for so many reasons and so forth, but I didn't realize that he was a heck of a football player also for Alcorn.
He's a good football player. He's captain of the team.
Yeah.
He's halfback. That
doesn't surprise me.
His brother Charlie was Charles was a lineman. He said I wasn't as good as Medgar. I was too busy chasing women.
You know,
that's what he told me.
That doesn't surprise me. Yeah,
that's yeah. Great. You that's know, awesome. both of them had served already in World War
that's
II.
Right. Yeah,
and
so they were probably older than I mean, they were probably in their late mid-20s at that point, I would think.
Early 20s. But everybody I talked to, all the older Alcorn players, said that Medgar was a really good player. And as you would expect, he was a team leader.
Right.
And they went his senior season. I think it was either 8-2 or 9-1.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. You have a section there, not so great moments in Mississippi history. One of them jumped out at me, Marshall High School in Chula, which I just respect that there is a Marshall High School. But they had 599 points scored on them in 2012. That little statistic on that. I'm sure that's not a plaque anywhere in the school on that. I know when I played defensive end, I probably had that many points scored on me, come to think of it. So I kind of feel for them a little bit. But that, like I said, that's the beauty of the book. Is it, like I said, you get these great stories about people that you know and you don't know, and teams, and you have it divided into sections, obviously. And talk a little bit about that, how you decide to structure the book, because it is, like I said, there's so many different moving parts and pieces to it that y'all had to figure out how to organize it pretty quick, or it was not going to be readable.
Yeah, that's right. And it was really difficult to decide what players to put in what section.
So that's a good question right there.
It's because, real easy to say, okay, Marcus Dupree, high school.
Right.
You know, he had a great year at Oklahoma and did a few things in the pro, but he really was the heart of his career was there. But you take somebody like Archie Manning.
Right.
You know, where do you put him? We put Archie in college.
Yeah.
Because he had a more notable time there, and he was a fantastic player, but his time with the Saints, I love Archie. He's a good friend. He holds a record that I didn't put in the not-so-great moments, just probably because I like Archie so much. He has the highest losing percentage of a pro quarterback with the most starts in NFL history. He had something like 194 starts and a winning record of 25.6%.
Yeah,
that tells you how great he was on a terrible team.
That he lived.
Yeah.
But so he survived it.
So he went into the college section. Yeah. But that was tough. And we moved some people around. Bruiser Kennard is in the college section, but he had a fine pro career too. And so we just organized it in a way that would be real easy for a reader to flip through a real detailed table of contents with some real small type because we cover so many players.
Yeah.
But you know, it was a lot of fun to figure this out. And the statistics, we didn't want them all to be in one place, so they're spread out throughout the book in their appropriate sections as well.
Yeah, you had the definition was born in Mississippi, significant part of life playing football in the state, and played football either at a Mississippi University College, community college, or high school.
Right.
So there you go. So, yeah. Like, for instance, Eli's in there for obvious reasons. Archie's in there for obvious reasons. And that other brother of theirs that played for a team that I like did not get mentioned. Yeah, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we can't claim Peyton Manning as a Mississippian, but he did spend
Yeah, he's been every fair in his life and working at the store.
You know, they worked. They worked at Williams Brothers in the summer. They spent a lot of time in Mississippi, but.
Yeah, not by the definition
of the book. So exactly right. Yeah, so he's a Mississippian. He just didn't really play here. So that sort of thing. So,
and I liked, and this was Neil's deal, was putting Cooper in there.
Yeah,
Cooper Manning.
Yeah, and I'm glad. I mean, like I said, that's one.
It's just heartbreaking.
Totally heartbreaking. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, some doctor without good bedside manner at the Mayo Clinic walked back in, and Cooper said, "So what about football?" And goes, "Oh, you'll never play another day of football." Just nonchalantly to Cooper and Archie in the room.
Now, like I said, I've heard that he was probably as talented, if not more talented, as talented as the brothers.
He was more athletic, faster. Yeah. He was a wide receiver.
He was a receiver. He would have been a, you know, who knows what would have happened, but I suspect he would have ended up playing in the NFL as a possession type receiver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, but can you imagine being told that?
No.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah, no.
He could do Cooper, if you know him, if you've ever been around him, you know he could do stand-up
comedy.
He
is the funniest human being. Yeah, I did a deal where I did the artwork for the Graduate Hotel in Knoxville. Peyton's one of the investors and had recommended me to do that. So I did like 50 pieces of artwork. So I got to go to the opening. And Archie and Olivia were there. Peyton and his family was there. And Cooper was there. My God, Cooper was hilarious. He kept the place like rolling the whole time. He's hilarious.
He is. And on that note, you know, one of the things about this is like Billy Cannon and that twist of fate that kept that 59 team from being the unanimous national champions. Had Cooper stayed healthy, had not this not been discovered, had he not developed this degenerative bone disease, his brother would have wanted to come play with him and throw at him, and Peyton would have been at Ole Miss.
Yeah,
he would have been. He's told me that a bunch of times. Yeah,
it's a twist.
And that would have changed the course of Ole Miss football.
Well, coming off my second spinal surgery, I will say that he made the right decision.
Yes, he did.
You don't want to mess around with that. You know, you don't realize what you have until you lose it, kind of thing. You do give a tip of the hat to the three blessed years. I think it's 2 years or 3 years we had with Kiffin, Deion Sanders, and Mike Leach all together.
What a trio.
What just amazing. I mean, it was like you didn't know where to focus your attention, you know, because it was so good.
It was like the three of the biggest characters in college football were all right here in Mississippi. You know, it was
just colorful, all three of them.
And Leach made, you know, the Egg Bowl, by the way, which I think is one of the greatest rivalries in the world, and I didn't realize it until I got here. I mean, truly, you know, the underdog's going to probably win every year. It's going to cause a fight at Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, there's going to be something on the field that we're going to be talking about for days to come. But those two, Kiffin and Leach, made that rivalry better because, in a way, they kind of poked at each other in a fun way. I mean, that stepbrothers meme where they're together, I thought was absolutely brilliant. I wish I had thought of that. That was just so good. But like I said, when Mike Leach passed away, I missed him. You don't realize how much you're going to miss somebody until they're gone. And, you know, that was just such a tragedy to lose him on so many different levels.
It was.
I've always said that with Ole Miss and State, they face such a uphill battle in being in the same division as, you know, LSU, Alabama, Auburn, now Texas A&M, soon to be Texas, Arkansas. You know, there's enough obstacles without tearing each other down.
Yeah.
And I think, to a degree, you know, both Kiffin and Leach figured that out.
Yeah.
Plus, I think also they genuinely liked each other.
I think
other.
So, too.
They made it civil again, and it had lost that.
Yeah. Oh, you think? Well, you know,
that's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, Civil War. You know, But, yeah, definitely. But, like I said, I'm glad y'all got that in there. I didn't realize that the first high school game was between Winona and Yazoo City, and that was back a long, long time ago. I mean,
1905? 1905.
Great
story.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite stories in the book because it's like, you know, those two towns aren't that far apart. But the team had to change trains to make the trip.
Yeah.
And I talked to the son of one of the players in the game, and he said that on the train ride down to Yazoo City, the game's played in Yazoo City, and the Winona team on the way down, they got threatened that they were going to throw them off the train if they didn't quiet down.
Yeah.
He said they thought they had the Jesse James gang on the train.
Oh, that's hilarious. And, you know, you think back then, of course, my kids think I didn't play with a face mask or helmet or anything like that. That was back when football was like – you know,
they grew their hair long so that it would protect their hair.
Yeah, definitely on that.
The other thing is that you can see in the team picture that's in the book, there was one rich kid that had a really ornate sweater with the number stitched in, and then some of the other guys just wore T-shirts with the
chalk on it.
Oh, yeah. That was good. Marcus Dupree, and like I said, I think one of the first books I read when I came here was The Courting of Marcus Dupree. And one of the things I always loved about it was, you know, I knew half the people in the book just because there were a lot of Clarion Ledger characters from there, too. And Willie's line about Lee Raglan, you know, how could somebody with the nickname Scoop not get that? I always remember that. Every time I see Scoop, I think about that. But Marcus's story was just, I mean, you know, I grew up in Georgia, so, I mean, we had Herschel Walker. But Marcus's story, he was just absolutely – a man amongst boys when he was playing. Unbelievable story.
Yeah. His senior year, you know, they put him back deep on the kickoffs. And, I mean, he was the kickoff return man. And he had scored so many touchdowns doing that as starting in the ninth grade. But his senior year, they only kicked off to him one time. And, of course, he scored.
Yeah. Scored that time.
Yeah. I mean, he was 6'3", weighed 230, and he ran a 4.340. I mean,
yeah,
it was unbelievable.
He was a 100-yard dash guy for the team. I think he might have won at state track meet. He also played on their basketball team and was real good. You know, Keith Warren was a teammate.
That's right.
Our buddy Keith.
Yeah, Keith, 5'7", and, you know. Yeah. But he was a good player. You know, I felt that way when I watched Cam Akers play, you know, back when he played – all those, God, it's been what now? Nearly 10 years ago, hasn't it? Time going fast. I think every kid that plays football needs to get this book.
Agreed.
Because it's just good to know where it's come from, you know. And I think every time I hear the Conrad Lake Trophy every year on that, and getting to know about Charlie and getting to know about who he was, and I'd forgotten he was the first Marlboro man. But I mean, I can't think of a better human being to be the Marlboro man if that's what you're going after, because that was just that fit his personality perfect. But he was an amazing guy.
He was ruggedly handsome too.
Yeah.
And you know, funny thing about Charlie, I got to be good friends with him very late in his life, and he was the hardest interview in the world because he just hated to talk about himself. He was such a modest guy. So I decided we were going to play golf. And we went out and played an 18-hole round of golf. And I finally, on about number 16-tee, I think it was, I said, Charlie, interviewing you is like going to the dentist. he finally said, I just don't like to talk about myself. And, boy, there was plenty to talk about, though.
There sure was.
You know, he hit 400 for the baseball team at Ole Miss.
Wow.
It was still ranked in the top 10 all-time seasons in the SEC 4 or 5 years ago. I got to be good friends with his wife, Perry Ann, who is
a columnist, too.
She was the first female sports reporter nationally syndicated, I think, in the country. But on Charlie's playing career, you know, we list all the Hall of Famers, Pro Football Hall of Famers, and we have a list at the bottom of people who should be in.
Yeah.
And he's one of them. And to tell you how good Charlie Connerly was, Brett Favre won the Most Valuable Player 3 years in a row. And those 3 seasons, his passer rating is ranked 2, 3, and 4. The number one season passing rating leader in the state is Charlie Connerly. He had a passer rating of 135 in 1959 when he was 38 years old.
Wow.
And would have been the MVP. Well, he actually was voted the MVP of that most famous, you know, the Colts-Giants game they said was the – well, they call it the greatest game and the one that put the NFL on the map. He had already been voted the MVP in the game, and then Unitas took him down the field for the game-winning drive, and they re-voted and made Unitas the MVP. And Perry Ann always used to say, and every time I saw, and I can't remember Johnny Unitas' wife's first name, she said, every time I saw Betty, I thought she, I was really mad because she was driving around my Corvette.
Perry Ann was so funny.
I bet she was great. So obviously she was probably easier to interview than
he was. She was fabulous. Yeah. She was great to interview about Charlie.
I sent her a letter 10 years ago, and our address is 426 South Lamar, Suite 16.
Yeah.
And she wrote back and said, really, Neil? Suite 16? Like, it wasn't my choice.
Exactly.
It's the office I rented.
It just worked out. It just worked out perfectly. Right. All right. This is Now You're Talking on MPB Think Radio. Folks, if you love football, you're going to love – I hope you've loved the show today. And I do recommend you going back and listen to the podcast if you'd missed any of the other. We've got two fantastic guests. We got the legendary Rick Cleveland is in the studio. And, of course, I'd like to think legendary as well. Neil White is here as talking a little bit about their new book, The Mississippi Football Book, which is great. Neil, you said you had a great story you wanted to share about, you know, working on this and about Rick, you know, being on the field.
Yeah. So there, Rick has been doing this for 57 years, and he has interviewed almost every person in this book in person. He asked me to write one profile.
He was not at the 1905 game, though.
Well, he did interview the son of somebody who was there, or grandson. So the great thing about Rick is he has this personal experience, and a lot of times he was on the field when these great behind the scene moments happened. And there's one such instance in 1970 when Southern Miss upset Ole Miss. Ole Miss was ranked number 4 or 5 in the country. Looked like they were gonna. It was Archie's senior season. Southern came in and upset them with the Wee Willie Heidelberg and Ray Guy keeping them down inside the 10-yard line. And Rick was on the field, and he has this story that it sort of exemplifies the kind of stories that are in this book about what happened at the end of the game.
Well, that's still the biggest upset I've ever seen in
I bet.
Doing what I've done for 57 years.
And you were at the 1980 game when then Alabama lost to State.
But State was a 20-point underdog that day.
Yeah.
They didn't even make a line on the Southern game.
Oh, wow.
On the Southern Ole Miss game. It was
too
many
Alabama.
Points. They had beaten Southern 69-7 the year before, and they were coming off of victories over Alabama and Georgia, and Southern had been – defeated 41-14 by San Diego State the week before. So Southern wins the game. I could talk about that forever, but Southern wins the game, and I'm down on the field to do the interviews. By the way, I was 17 years old, and I walk out behind Johnny Vaught to midfield for the handshake of he and P.W. Underwood. P.W. was about 5'11 and weighed about 330, much of which was muscle. And I'm walking out behind Vaught, and I see the USM players struggling to get Bear Underwood up on their shoulders, and they kind of stagger out to midfield with Underwood on their shoulders, and they got there, and finally they just dropped him. They couldn't hold him up anymore. Yeah. And to Vaught's credit, he said at that moment, well, hell, Bear, you couldn't expect two miracles in one day. That's just one of the greatest things I've ever seen. And of course, you know, later on, years and years and years and years later, I actually did a book on Vault and got to know him really when he was in his 90s, you know, got to know him well in his 90s.
But Rick has those kind of firsthand stories that nobody knows about.
That's
and
right.
They're in this book, and a great portion of this book are Rick's greatest hits and those stories that everybody needs to know.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, like I said, I've been a fan. I mean, we've worked together for years and we're friends, but I've been a huge fan. And this book, I'm thrilled for both of you because I think it's going to be a really big success, rightfully so, on that. I loved, you know, it's funny. You talk, there's certain games that people will talk about still. I mean, like I said, and I mentioned the Alabama-Mississippi State game, and I think that's one that people – everybody was there apparently because everybody has a memory of being in the stadium that day. But what Bear Bryant did at the end of that game, I thought – and this was like 2 years before he died. So he was like really old Bear Bryant at that point. But what he did was an incredible class act.
You talk to any Mississippi State player about that game and you ask them their memory – and invariably, the first thing they talk about is in the locker room, the Mississippi State locker room post-game, when Bear Bryant came in, was helped up onto one of those metal folding chairs by two Mississippi Highway Patrolmen and addressed the team.
Wow.
And congratulated them and told
after,
them,
yeah,
people are going to talk about this being an upset. But y'all just whipped our butts.
That's incredible.
What a class act.
That's amazing. Yeah.
He's my favorite coach of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, no doubt.
Speaking of hard-nosed football coaches, I would have given anything to listen to the Bull Sullivan radio show.
Oh,
I saw that in there, and I was just thinking that they must have had some poor producer in there just hitting the button every 30 seconds to make sure something didn't get out over the air.
We got a nice spread on, on Bull.
Yeah. I always was fascinated that the stars on the jersey represented his the fellow Marines. I guess he was
buddies
a Marine.
That got killed.
He killed in Okinawa.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just chills every time I think about
it. It's one of the great characters of in sports history, not Mississippi sports history, sports history.
Yeah.
He was such a character, he had to have two nicknames. One was Bull and the other was Cyclone.
Cyclone, that's right.
And really not widely known outside of the scuba area until the Sports Illustrated
story.
See,
if he could have just done, you know, Last Chance U with Bull Sullivan, that would have been – I mean, forget Buddy. I mean, Buddy was great in the show. I don't want to take anything away from him.
That
Bull Sullivan
– that would have been number one.
It's like, wow, I can't believe he's making them go tackle trees. I don't understand this.
You know? Oh, and having your goal line drilled down on the edge of a pond. telling the offense, all right, now, boys, drown them.
I know. I was like, wait a minute. I feel like that, you know – because like I said, I always whine about, oh yeah, we had to take salt tablets and then we get to drink out of the hose that had been sitting in the sun for 10 hours and so the water was boiling and stuff like that. Man, that was nothing compared to what those guys played in football to toughen them up on that. But like I said, you do have the coaches, you have the players, and you've got a nice piece on Jack Crystal in there, a man who was able to paint absolute beautiful word pictures. You know, there were the greats back then. Of course, we had John Ward up in Tennessee, but I mean, Jack Crystal was as good as they got.
He was, and he did it. You know, he did it for 50 something years.
Yeah,
I mean,
kidding.
And that's amazing.
Yeah,
it is.
I mean, that is really amazing, especially when you realize he smoked about two packs of cigarettes
when I did
during
his,
every
when,
game.
When I did his Obit cartoon, I had him with a cigarette up in heaven. I was like, I may be breaking some rules here. I don't know, but I figured it wouldn't be right.
It wouldn't have been right otherwise.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
That's a great cover to Sid's.
Oh yeah, Sid's book.
Biography.
Yeah, Sid,
yeah, that
Sid
picture's
did a great job
unbelievable.
With the book.
Yeah.
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 So we know that the book's out. Obviously, you did the book festival and had a good panel there. Now the book tour begins. So tell us a little bit about A, how to get the book, and where you're just some upcoming places you're going to be.
Sure, sure. The book's for sale at all the independent bookstores in Mississippi.
Huge shout out to them, by the way.
Yeah,
we're blessed
yeah.
to have them in Mississippi.
Absolutely. You know, Square Books and Lemuria and, you know, Turn Row, Reed's Bookstore. And
is Turn Row back open?
They're going to be selling the books. They're still recovering from the fire.
Okay.
And so I want to support them
amen.
In whatever way that we can. Pass Christian Books mm-hmm. on the coast. And it's available online as well at nautiluspublishing.com/football.
Okay. Very good. And y'all will do signings and so forth.
We will. We have events scheduled at Square Books next a week from Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then we are going to be at Lemuria the week that Ole Miss plays Alabama, and that time for the signing will be dependent upon kickoff time. We don't want to compete with football to sell the football book.
Yeah, that would be awkward.
It would be.
And people always talk about that. Why is the book festival in August? Because they don't want to compete with football season.
That's
and
right.
Also because that's when books come out. So those are two things that usually.
And the Capitol's available.
Well, then there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No and special sessions.
We're going to be doing the day before the Ole Miss Tulane game in New Orleans will be at Garden Street Books.
Oh, nice.
In New Orleans.
We may have some special guests there, too.
Really?
Yes. And the following...
Yeah, I wonder who those might be. In New Orleans, it could be anybody.
The following week, the following Saturday, I'm going to be doing it at the Southern Miss bookstore right by the stadium the day they play Tulane.
So, oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, and I think the beautiful thing about the book is that everybody gets love in this book. I mean,
you
cover everybody very well. Jackson State, obviously, you know, that was what was so great about their resurgence for the last two or three years, and hopefully that continues. But just seeing them back being the champions that they were, because they have put so many people into the NFL and so many Hall of Famers, too.
More Pro Football Hall of Famers than... the other schools.
Then a lot of states.
Then New York, I think. Yeah,
definitely. Any final thoughts? We got about a minute.
Well, and one of the lists is that Mississippi schools have won 33 national championships.
Wow.
High school, junior college, college.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it's like when I was doing the book with Nash on the gridiron cathedrals, you know, football's the thing that brings every community together in the state. It really is. It's just fantastic. So, but I'm thrilled for y'all. This is a great book, the Mississippi football book. I like I said, and the thing is, and I can tell you on books, there's usually, and I know my wife's one of them, they don't know what to get their husband.
This is a good one.
This is a good one. Yeah, they'll like it.
Doesn't matter what school you pull for.
No, like I said, there was stuff in there, and I thought I knew more than I did. But, boy, I mean, 5 minutes into it, I couldn't put it down. So,
thanks, Marshall.
Yeah. The thing I love about it, there's Ole Miss books, there's Mississippi State books, there's Southern books. But this is all inclusive, high school, junior college, professional.
Yeah, and it celebrates something that we do really well here in this state.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just kind of like the book festival did, too. So that was great. Hey, it's so good. We'll have to have you back on just talk about anything, because I really enjoyed this.
Sounds great. Thanks, Marshall.
That sounds good. Thank you for listening, and special thanks to our guests, Rick Cleveland and Neil White, for joining us today. If you'd like to hear this or any past episodes, subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app or on our MPB Public Media app. Now You're Talking is a production of MPB Think Radio, with episode and podcast produced by the incredible, wonderful, and sometimes likable Jermaine Flood. And join us again next Monday at 10. I'm Marshall Ramsey. Y'all have a great week.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.